Pittsburgh Pop before Thanksgiving. Tim Benz and Rob Owen with you. Hopefully you have a good holiday. One more episode of our weekly look at pop culture before we get to the holiday weekend. And we can talk about some of the things that you can watch during the holiday weekend if you got some downtime. Hopefully I'll have a little catch up. I know there's one topic in particular Rob wants to talk about later on in our podcast that I've fallen behind on. So I need to catch back up again at his recommendation. But Rob, first of all, what are your Thanksgiving plans? You got anything big set up?
Just spending some time with family is what we'll be up to.
Yeah, I'll be heading out to Boston to do some of that on Friday. Also to watch Syracuse versus BC because I'm a masochist, primarily.
Right.
Go up to New Hampshire, see one of my college roommates too. So yeah, I've got some family time planned as well, which is tougher to do during the holidays for me because it's usually football season and I can't bounce around. And a lot of people will be watching plenty of football this upcoming weekend. And there is some news about the Amazon Prime ratings that maybe we can talk about. Prime TV as well. Prime Video, rather, as it relates to sports talk. We'll get into all that. But Rob, with the Thanksgiving weekend, that actually also goes hand in glove with the start of Christmas season. For some people, it started the day after Halloween ended.
It started before Halloween on Hallmark Channel, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, for a lot of people, it never really stops. You know, maybe for a week or two in July or something. But
No, that's when they do Christmas in July.
Oh, you're right. Christmas in July. Like, my favorite part about Christmas in July here in Pittsburgh is that Arsenal Cidery puts out its snowbound cinnamon for a couple weeks for Christmas in July. Sometimes people will put out like Christmas beers. Southern Tier put out its Xmas beer, which I like very much. That's the best part about Christmas in July to me. But let's get to some Christmas holiday viewing. And one tradition that a lot of people have is A Christmas Story, to watch that over Christmas. But now let's talk about A Christmas Story Christmas. What's this about?
Yes, this is the latest sequel, because I bet you didn't know, Tim, there have already been two sequels to A Christmas Story.
Yes, they were so successful that I knew nothing about them.
Right, yeah. One was called My Summer Story, although it originally was called It Runs in the Family. And then there was a direct-to-DVD Christmas Story 2 in 2012. Neither of those were barn burners, and I don't think either of them had much of the original team involved. But A Christmas Story Christmas is different. It does have many of the original players involved, particularly Peter Billingsley, played Ralphie in the original. He is back. He is now an adult. It is 1973. He goes by Ralph instead of Ralphie. And as the movie opens, his father, the old man from the original, has passed away. And so his family leaves their home in Chicago and goes back to his Indiana home to be with his mom. And they do a good job of using the passing of his dad, but not making it overly sad. I think tonally, it's very much in line with the original humor and heart. But it does lack a little bit. The thing I think that people maybe forget about the original one is it did have a little bit of cynicism about holidays and traditions and nostalgia. I mean, that whole decoder ring thing, that was, you know, mocking some of the commercialism inherent in that we forget about in the nostalgia. And there's not so much of that in this one. It is certainly not better than the original Christmas Story. It is better than the two previous sequels, I imagine. But I think if you like A Christmas Story, you will enjoy seeing these characters again. Some of the kids are now grown up. Schwartz and can't remember the other one's name. They are back, same actors. And then Scott Farkas is back. His is the best role, I think.
Scott Farkas returns.
Yes, and I'm not going to say anything more about how, but it's the same actor, Zach Ward, who was in the original. They have a different actress playing the mom. It's Julie Haggerty instead of Melinda Dillon, who I suspect Dillon hasn't acted in a decade, so I suspect she's retired at this point.
I was going to ask you about that, because some from the cast have passed.
Yeah, well, Darren McGavin, who played the old man, he passed away in 2006. So they, you know, they worked that into the story. You know, I think that it was never going to be as good as the original. To me, my biggest gripe with it is that some of the set pieces from the original are repeated here, like almost verbatim. Like Ralphie's kids go to visit the Santa at Higbee's, and it's almost like a shot for shot redo of the original. And I'm just like, why? Why would you do that? There's no improving on that. Just find a different way in. And they do in some other things. There's a new triple dog dare that is different.
Now, is Flick part of this? Because Scott Schwartz has
Yes.
continued to act.
Yes, Flick is that was the one I couldn't remember earlier. Flick, who's played by Schwartz, and then Schwartz, who's a different character.
Right,
They are
yes.
both back in this in a decent way. So I don't know. I think for some people, any sequel to A Christmas Story is going to be heresy. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I thought it was fine. But of course, it lives on HBO Max. So if you're used to watching A Christmas Story on TBS and TNT and you don't have HBO Max, you're never going to see it anyway.
What about the, is there a narration element to this?
Yes, there is some narration. According to IMDb, it's not Peter Billingsley who's doing the narration. It's somebody else entirely, even though it's supposed to be in Ralphie's head. But yes, there is some narrated element.
Gene Shepherd was the name of the guy who was the narrator, right?
I believe that's right, and he is not with us anymore. And he's the one who wrote the book, In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash, which A Christmas Story was taken from. And they do a nice thing with Ralph and his career goals that sort of link up nicely with Shepherd, and I appreciated
How is the Red Ryder BB gun referenced?
that too. Briefly, there is Ralph does some work in the attic of his mom's house, and the camera pans over some things, including a glimpse of the Red Ryder BB.
How about Lifebuoy soap, or do they go to a Chinese restaurant at any point?
No Chinese restaurant. I don't remember. I don't think there's any soap.
All right, well, let's get to some other holiday viewing, Rob. We talked about this for Halloween. Let's talk about it for Thanksgiving as well, for people who might have not have heard the Halloween episode of our podcast that want to see a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. Where can they find it? Does it live the same place where a Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown is housed?
Yes, and that would be at tv.apple.com or on the Apple TV app. And it is fr the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving will be free from November 23rd to November 27 only. And yes, you have to have an Apple account, but those are free. So somebody was complaining the last time about that. I'm like, well, it's free. You can, if you want it, you can have it.
Oh, that's
So
great.
yes.
I didn't realize that they were doing that again for the Thanksgiving one. I know you made reference to that for It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. I didn't know the Thanksgiving one had the cachet, but it makes sense. If you're going to do it for one, you should do it for all. Now, will they do it for the Christmas Charlie
Yep.
Brown as well? I
Yep.
wonder.
Christmas is free on Apple TV Plus December 22nd through 25th.
Excellent. All right, now let's get to Spirited, which I don't know everything about, but I feel like I should with the amount of mass promotion that it's gotten during all the football games that I watch.
Yeah, I don't see many commercials these days, and even I have seen commercials for Spirited. Yes, this is a musical adaptation of A Christmas Carol by Pask and Paul. They were the folks who did the music for The Greatest Showman. They've done other musicals in the past. So there are some numbers in it that are a lot of fun, that are visually, great to look at. Love the musical numbers, no question about that. And some of them might even become memorable in time. My big problem is, if you are doing the 3,000th version of A Christmas Story, it shouldn't take more than 2 hours to tell that story. And even if it's a musical, especially if you've already cut one of the songs and put it in the end credits. So I wish they had taken some scissors to it and trimmed it a little bit, because I think it could be a great little holiday movie. My worry is that people are going to get bored before they get to any of the best musical numbers in it. So It's okay. I think if you like musicals, if you like Paskin Paul, it's probably worth watching for that. But I wish it were better than it is.
Do you have a particular favorite version of A Christmas Carol?
Muppets Christmas Carol.
Okay, I
Yep.
was gonna go with Disney.
Oh, Scrooge McDuck. Yes.
I
That's
mean,
a good
like
one
that
too.
launched a whole character. Like Scrooge McDuck became his own thing because of that.
Right.
He was that
Right.
good. He was
Yep.
that good of a remake. I forgot about the Muppets one, but yeah, the Muppets one was pretty good too. I'm trying to think if there's a real life one that I like as much as either of those two. I don't think the answer is yes.
I mean, I remember at the time liking the Bill Murray Scrooged,
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
but I haven't watched it in years, so I don't know.
Yeah, that and Elf, these all start to make the rounds. And certainly all the Hallmark movies that are out, everybody starts to watch those again and again. There's one more I wanted to get to. Let's get to Best in Snow on Disney Plus because there's some local ties there.
I wrote about this last week. It's a special, not a series. It's about a 90-minute special, and it is snow sculpting. And so, but it's a little different than, I mean, most arts and crafts kind of competition series, you get people who are really good at the craft and let them go to town, like Blown Away, it's glass blowing, and Master Drink Masters, it's making cocktails. This is weird because you have four teams of four people, and each team is paired with these master carvers. And for the most part, the people on the teams have no experience with sculpting ice or snow. So it's very bizarre. And one of the teams is made up of four women who used to work together at the Pittsburgh Glass Center. Only one of them is still on staff there, but they're all artists.
Is that where is that in Lawrenceville?
I think it's just up, I want to say, is it Garfield? Is it just up from
Okay.
Lawrenceville? I
All
feel
right.
like. And the women I talked to were great. They clearly just had the time of their life doing this thing. They got flown to Keystone, Colorado in February to shoot this. And it's odd in a bunch of different ways. So you've got artisans who are being judged on their craft, even though they have no experience at the craft. There's no grand prize other than a trophy and bragging rights. You have a cappella carolers coming in and out singing the story. You have Kermit the Frog. You have this stop motion animation thing that wraps around it. And you have Titus Burgess playing this kind of wheezing mayor of the supposed town that it's all taking place in. It's a lot. I wouldn't say it's good. It's very odd, but I am happy for these four women that they had a fun time. There is some terrific snow sculpting that comes out of it, although you have to wonder how much was that the master carvers versus the teams, given that the teams have no experience with it, and these look like, magnificent creations. So not great reality TV, I would say, but at least fun for some folks from Pittsburgh.
Well, Rob, I brought this up at the outset. We have to weave in some football if we're talking Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving viewing, right? That's as
Yes.
American as the holiday itself these days. So let's look at the games. Buffalo and Detroit, Dallas and New York, New England and Minnesota. It's a 12:30 start on CBS for the first game, Buffalo versus the Lions. The Lions always host on Thanksgiving, as do the Cowboys. They're at 4:30 against the Giants. Then it's the Patriots and the Vikings on NBC at 8:20 for the late game. And it's rare that all three of the games on Thanksgiving have some sort of tie into the playoffs, in part usually because the Lions are usually so bad that they if the other team that's involved is not good and it's another divisional team, it's not always a great division. You often get one game that's an absolute dud, especially the 12:30 game in Detroit. But since Buffalo has playoff aspirations, that game is going to at least include one potential playoff team. And then the other games, similar situations there. Good divisional matchup in the East between the Giants and the Cowboys. Now, one thing I wanted to bring up, none of these games are on Prime Video. And I don't have the time that we're speaking here, very good numbers any numbers actually on the Tennessee Green Bay game on Prime Video, which was the most recent game. But prior to that, I wrote about this very quickly in First Call at Breakfast with Ben's. The prime numbers for Thursday Night Football had not been great at all. According to Sports Media Watch, the Week 10 game between the Falcons and Panthers bottomed out and averaged 6.8 million viewers. That's the smallest audience in the slot during 2022. ProFootballTalk.com reported that was significant because the season average now sits under 10 million for the first time. So 9 games in, Prime Video average viewership of 9.65 million. Prime Video promised advertisers an average of 12.5 million. Now, Amazon is disputing the Nielsen numbers. They're claiming the average is around 11.4 million. But Rob, maybe you can speak to this a little bit, like what that means when a television network promises to the advertisers a certain ratings hit, because 12.5, if you believe the first numbers, they're not close to that. Amazon is spinning them a different way. I think there's two topics there. First of all, what does it mean if Prime Video's numbers are not up to snuff, A, and B, the gray matter that it goes along with television ratings these days? It's not as cut and dry as it used to be, is it?
No, it used to seem complicated, and now it seems oh so simple compared to today. So let me get to the first question first. So if you don't get the ratings that a network promised, then the network has to offer make goods, which would be compensation in some form, whether that's cash back or extra spots in a future broadcast, or, you know, there will be some way to make it right. So that's number one. Number two, what in terms of the ratings, you know, you've got these reports showing that it's gloom and doom for Thursday night on Amazon. I've got a thing here from Julia Alexander, who works for Parrot Analytics, saying that viewership of Thursday Night Football is up 24% this season after moving from Fox and the NFL Network to Amazon. So go figure. I don't know who's right. Actually, they could both be right. It could be that they're not doing as well as Amazon promised, and the ratings are still up from on linear. But I don't know. It's an area that I'm not as well versed in, particularly now where ratings are murkier than ever before.
Speaking of Prime Video, they're trying to venture into sports talk, you told me, huh?
Yes. So they Amazon announced this week, and I think there had been some reporting even beforehand, that they are launching a block of sports talk programs, original shows that will air live Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Prime Video. There are multiple shows with different hosts and anchors originating from different places. It's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of money that you're putting in for people and programming that I question if there's much of an audience for it. I mean, they seem to be trying to, you know, wrest away viewers from ESPN, but they're doing it in a place where people aren't accustomed to watching sports talk or news programming. So
I don't recognize a ton of the names either, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. The Carrie Champion show is one.
I know Carrie Champion.
Okay.
She's like the biggest name of the bunch that I saw there. And, you know, I'm of the opinion, Rob, that national sports coverage is good. National sports talk sucks. I've done some of it when we were an ESPN affiliate back when ESPN 1250 was owned and operated by the mothership. And I did some of the weekend shows, and, you know, I'd walk in there even to start and say, I don't think this would be very good. And it's hard to be good at national sports talk because it's so surface area for everything.
Right.
Like, you can get away with the National Football League. You can get away with maybe the NBA because it's such a star-driven sport. But, you know, once you get beyond the SEC in college football, or once you get beneath the quarterbacks and coaches on every football team, it's hard to really sink your teeth into the meat of a topic unless it's a big national topic, like, you know, kneeling during the anthem, you know, something like that, you know, a literally the debate over instant replay, who should get in the Hall of Fame. I mean, these very low hanging fruit. Everybody's done it over and over again. You know, there's a running joke, somebody from WFAN, I think it was Steve Summers who brought it up, that said, because he used to do overnights at WFAN back when sports talk first launched. He's like, you know, whenever I don't get any calls, I just say, should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? You know, and there's always a handful of those. You know, that's an older school extreme example, but you know what I'm talking about. You get the point that there's these tropes that you go to if there's no real in your face national topic. And I have no interest in national sports talk. I don't watch national sports talk on FSN. I don't watch it on CBSSN. I don't watch it on ESPN. Because I just don't think that the national hosts can do as good of a job on a local topic as anybody who does it locally. It's just, it strikes me as surface level. You know what I mean?
So you will be sending your regrets to that RSVP from Amazon for the Power Hour and from the desk of Master T.
Yes. Yeah. I think they might regret the whole concept, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, this all to me seems to point towards them and other streamers looking to get into more sports or more live programming, including sports. I mean, I'm not sure why else you would do, you know, a whole day's worth of sports talk if the plan wasn't at some point to add more sports beyond just Thursday night football on Amazon. Don't you think?
Yeah, and the other thing about it is you wade into something here, and this is kind of getting in the weeds when it comes to the sports media business, and I don't want to bog everything down on that front, but you know, with the advent of Twitter, the advent of streaming services, especially podcasts, the ability to stream on your phone, anything you want, anytime, on any topic, from anywhere, it's made the globalization of sports media more local than it's ever been. Like, the great irony is you can go anywhere at any time. So what does everybody do? They just find more of what's in their zip code.
Right.
Like, no longer are you a Pittsburgher who lives in Nashville, Tennessee, and you get exposed to, this is what Vanderbilt is doing, and this is what the Titans are doing, and this is what the Predators are doing. Like, you're not submerged in all of that because you can just pick up your phone and get what they're saying on The Fan. You can get Mark Madden's show. You can get my pregame show. Like, the wider we cast the net, the more of the little pond that we end up swimming in. It's really weird how that happened. Like, you know, there are plenty of books that I'm sure could be written on this topic, you know, like media think tank books. But for them to dive into this field now, to me, seems like you're in a super saturated business as it is. You know, like, it's really hard for me to say, yes, I'm going to watch a Prime Video show that's going to involve a lot of talk on what happened in the Memphis Grizzlies-Boston Celtics game last night when the Penguins are playing the Canadians tomorrow. Like, it's hard to capture a national sports fan's interest in that regard. We just want to know how national stories affect our little world, I think, now more than ever.
Yes, I think you're absolutely correct. And I will be curious to see if a year from now, this 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. sports talk abundance still exists on Prime Video.
Two more quick things before we go for the holidays, Rob. First and foremost, we should bring this up because I know, especially with the relaunch and reinterest, the reunion for Friends, everybody, it seems like Friends is as popular now as it was when you and I were at Syracuse, for crying out loud. But Jennifer Aniston's dad passed away, John Aniston.
Yes.
And that was, I think, like a wake up call for a lot of people who didn't know her dad was an actor.
Yeah. Well, he was a soap opera actor, right?
Right.
He was on daytime soaps for years and years and years.
And won Emmys, right?
Daytime Emmys. Yep. Absolutely.
Was she, that whole cast practically was recast from who they thought would be the originals. Was she an up and comer? Like, had she gotten roles, Jennifer Aniston?
So she actually, this one I remember. She was actually in a CBS sitcom that they took a gamble on her for Friends because her first position was the CBS sitcom, which hadn't even gone on the air when they cast her in the Friends pilot. And they were kind of gambling that it was going to flop and that she'd be available to do Friends. Otherwise, they would have to have reshot the pilot. So she did have some smaller roles prior to Friends, but Friends was what obviously catapulted her to household name status.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people kind of remember that show and think this is the first time we've heard of just about anybody on this program. But I figured with her, you think because she grew up in a Hollywood house that she had the inroads perhaps above and beyond anybody else who was in that cast, you know? And I had forgotten that her dad was an actor until I saw the news of his passing. I think he was 83 or something like that. She'd posted some nice things on Instagram and photos of the two of them and so forth. But I just want to throw that out there. I know it happened a week ago, but I think it happened right after you and I posted our last episode,
Yeah.
so I wanted to mention it. And the last thing is, and this is what I referenced at the top of the show, you've told me to get back into Andor.
Yes, Andor, which is having its season finale, first season finale this week on Wednesday, is just become the most excellent Star Wars series ever. It may be the best Star Wars storytelling ever, period. Movies, TV, regardless of the platform. It is just and it's not a kid's Star Wars, you know. There's no fluffy Ewoks. There's one sort of sad robot who stutters. You can't look at it and say, oh, that's going to be the toy. Like when I watched Obi-Wan Kenobi, it was very clear Lola, this the little robot that flew around, she's going to be the toy. And sure enough, I saw the toy at Walmart this past weekend.
Does it fly?
I don't think it flies, but like things pop open and it
Okay.
does stuff. But there's nothing like that in Andor. It is very much a Star Wars for adults. It is very much a mature, sophisticated form of storytelling. Characters are, you know, more gray than they are black or white. It just there's and there've been all there are these different sort of like pods in this first season. And that first pod is a little bit slow, I would say. However, I've seen the finale now, and it makes that first pod make a lot more sense. Once you see the finale, you'll see, oh, we needed this setup in order to have this payoff in the finale. Because a lot of pieces that were kind of disparate for a large chunk of the series really come together for the finale. And the section we just came through, there's this whole prison story, and it is extremely well done. And the dialogue, you know, Star Wars is not known for good dialogue. You know, we all make fun of that terrible dialogue in the prequels that George Lucas wrote. The dialogue in this, there are some like soliloquies that it's almost Shakespearean. It is that good. So,
I saw the
yes,
one that was going around the internet from the older guy that recruited.
Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Yeah, as Luthen.
Yeah, that was all over the internet the other day. It was a
Yeah.
meme that was going around that just, and it was just the dialogue itself. It wasn't even him
Yeah.
saying it, it was just written, the written prose.
Yes, it's very good. So get back on board, and after you've seen the whole thing, we'll revisit and discuss.
Great, Rob. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to you too, Tim.
We will be back next week for more Pittsburgh Pop. Have a good holiday.